Hi there, and welcome back to the Prime Time True Crime Podcast. Last time, I led a discussion on the Somerton Man case, and today, Brody is going to talk about another case, the case of D.B. Cooper.
Yeah, my main man D.B. Cooper, today Daddy's at the wheel, and we're going to go through probably my favourite true crime case. I love this man. I think this crime's amazing. I think it's really fun to look into, so let's get into it. So, very unorthodox to call a criminal your favourite, but in the case of D.B. Cooper, where crimes that kind of don't have a victim, it's only kind of a monetary crime that's kind of on the side of the government, I mean, he's just so cool. Like, my favourite crime story, this one, and you'll see as we go along, he's just the coolest criminal. How much do you know about him, Robin?
I know the basics. I know what happened, and I know how it played out.
You don't know any of the theories, though?
Not off the top of my head.
Awesome. I'll go through this then, and we can kind of look into the theories about who it might have been. So, first off, he gave the name Dan Cooper to the air hostess and those kind of authorities. He never gave the name D.B. Cooper.
Was there any evidence to prove that he was a Dan Cooper?
Well, I feel like if you're going to hijack a plane, you're not giving your real name, so it's probably more of an alias. None of the suspects we have got the name Dan Cooper, so one likely just a name he was gave them. Yep. His name that was like misreported commonly is known as D.B. Cooper. The FBI believe that's just kind of a mess up by the media. They've just kind of misreported and that sort of thing.
So what sort of, like, what year was this? Would Dan be a common name for someone?
Well, Dan is just a common name throughout time. So is kind of Cooper as a last name. They're both kind of generic. This crime took place in 1971, so yeah, damn, still a very common name, still is today.
I see from your notes it was November 24th.
November 24th, on a Wednesday.
Two days after my birthday.
Awesome, thanks for letting the audience know then. Presents for Robin, maybe.
Thank you.
So, his crime he was convicted with by the FBI was air piracy, which is basically just hijacking a plane and kind of, you know, that sort of thing. They later upped this to him violating the Hobbs Act. This is because the statute of limitation on air piracy is only 5 years, but the violation of the Hobbs Act is a lot longer. It's also so breaking the Hobbs Act is basically where it's to prevent extortion, which is what Dan Cooper ultimately did. He asked the government to give him money in order to return hostages on the plane. We'll get into that later, but basically they just changed his sort of like what he did wrong to kind of, you know, keep this open a bit longer. So as was stated, Wednesday...
I was just going to say, I find that always really interesting when they really want to nail someone for a crime, they're just like, you know what, we're going to lift the statute of limitations and make it so we can get this person.
I think this one's better though, where he did technically violate the Hobbs Act, so this is something that's legitimate instead of just saying, look, we want to catch this guy, we're going to lift the statute of limitation. I don't really like when they kind of rewrite the rules and that to catch or, you know, convict certain criminals. I think, you know, playing within the rules is what a government should do just to keep consistency. So Wednesday, November 24th, 1971, Mr. Dan Cooper, I'm just going to call him DB from now on. I think that's just a lot easier and more commonly known. Bought a $20 one-way ticket on flight 305.
Jeez, that's cheap.
This was 1971.
How do you know how much money that would be today, roughly?
No, but I know how much money he extorted.
Yeah.
Yep. So I haven't done the figures on the $20.
Did he make his plane ticket back? These are the questions.
Oh, he did. Definitely did. Okay. So this flight was heading for Seattle. Mr. DB was a man. He appeared in his mid-40s. He wore a business suit with a black tie and a white shirt. Something to note here is that his appearance was very, very well known. The plane he hijacked, when he hijacked it, he sat with and was mingling around air hostess for hours upon hours, so they had a very clear idea of what he looked like. There's a very famous sketch you can look up of D.B. Cooper. It's very detailed, very accurate.
So he wasn't really trying to hide who he was, far as that goes.
Well, he did, you know, after he... We'll get into it as a very gangster he did. Such a cool man. But I don't think so. I think just he was just... There's a theory that he did it spur of the moment, where he was just on a plane. He's like, you know what, I'm going to hijack that. There's obviously flaws that story, but that's kind of a idea of what happened there.
Do we assume then, if just an offhand comment, do we assume then his, I guess, almost arrogance at not trying to cover his identity. He knew he wouldn't be... I know from the case that they haven't...
Caught.
They haven't caught D.B. Cooper.
Well, the thing also note with this is, and what makes this guy, I'm so man crush on him, he was very cool, calm and collected the whole way through. He was very, you know, casual sort of guy. He was talking to the air hostess normally. He ordered a bourbon as he got on the plane. After he passed him a hijack note, he put on sunglasses and just kind of sat there. So, obviously, he's trying to keep up the cool guy act, whether it's an act or whether he really just spur of the moment thought, I'm going to hijack this plane. Well, we'll never really know, but...
I just kind of wonder, did he think he was going to... Well, he did, but did he know he was going to get away with this?
That's another thing we'll get into later. We'll cover all this later, yeah.
Get into the story.
Yep. So, like I said, he ordered a bourbon and soda as he got on the plane. As he ordered the drink, he handed the stewardess a note stating that he had a bomb in his briefcase and asked her to please sit with him. Upon sitting with him, Cooper showed her a bunch of wires and red sticks within his briefcase, stating that it was a bomb. She then took the note to the captain. In this note, D.B. Cooper demanded 4 parachutes and $200,000 US, which at counting for inflation now would be $2,219,277.11 in American.
So a bit more than his plane ticket.
Yeah, and in Australian that would equate to around like $3.6 million. So quite a high ransom. Once he, you know, the pilot contacted the local authorities and they worked it out. As they landed, he exchanged the passengers for the money and the parachutes, and then took a couple of stewardess and the captains and ordered the plane to fly over Mexico City.
Right, no one sort of, from your understanding, sort of known about what's going on apart from the air hostess, D.B. Cooper himself, and the captain at this point.
Well, they rang the authorities to get the money in check and also to meet them to exchange the passengers for the money.
What was the passenger sort of atmosphere?
Well, I mean, like, once again, he was very cool, calm, collected. They might not even have known what was going on. They might just, like, we're boarding... we're going to stop here, please get off the plane, that sort of thing. I'm not quite sure on these details, I'm more...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wasn't really my big focus. A thing to note, though, is when he told them to fly over Mexico City, he was very broad. He just said, fly over that. He didn't say a certain destination. He didn't ask for a certain place in particular. He just said, over this kind of general area. So, yeah, we'll get into this later, why it's important. So, between Seattle and Reno, around 8 p.m. at night, DB jumped out of the plane with his parachute and the money. And then from this, DB Cooper disappeared and the FBI opened their extensive, very extensive, like, I think it's still going for, I know, investigation into the hijacking. They called it NORJAC, which is short for Northwest Hijacking.
Okay.
And that's the whole case.
So when you say he disembarked from the plane somewhere over Seattle and Reno.
Yep.
Did he just... No one just noticed he just jumped out randomly?
From what local legends say, that he just was at the back of the plane, the pilots and the air hostess were talking to themselves, and he just jumped. He took 4 parachutes, assuming that in order to make sure the FBI didn't give him a dodgy parachute, he ordered 4, so the FBI has to say to themselves, look, he might give 1 to the pilots and 1 to himself, so we have to make sure they all work.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously there was planning there. As I said before, we come back to it now. As you can see, a lot of planning goes into the exchange of prisoners, the getting the bomb, the getting the message. But in terms of jumping out of the plane, it was very kind of...
Did you take the briefcase?
Yes. So you jumped with the parachutes and briefcase of money. Right. But yeah, like...
What was the conclusion with the... Do we have a conclusion on the briefcase? Was this a bomb?
Yeah, it was later found, and there have been money with the serial numbers passed around in transition, but people aren't sure whether DB was paying them himself or people have just come across the money.
So was the suitcase a bomb, though?
Oh, his actual suitcase?
Yeah.
No, not that I'm aware of. People say if it is, like, if we go with the whole spur-of-the-moment case, he might just had a briefcase with some things in it that he made look like a bomb, or the air hostess was so kind of hysterical at this guy saying, I have a bomb, look at my briefcase, that she kind of, you know, made it up in her head, like, more than what it was. Could have been, like, rolls or something in some, like, wires or thin objects that may look like a bomb. The other thing to note, too, is, yeah, like, just the lack of planning towards the end is quite substantial. Okay.
Or was it planned? He just chose a moment of distraction.
That's the thing. Well, no, but it wasn't planned because he just said to fly over this particular area. He didn't have it. So obviously, when you do things like that, you can't really have a destination in mind. You can't really have someone to get it with a getaway car. You can't plan to like travel a certain route. So
he must have been familiar.
Well, that's the thing.
With the area to...
Yeah, think. But he has to be familiar with a bunch of areas. Yeah, that's what I'm... Because, like, he didn't even know what direction the pilot was flying towards. He just said, towards the city.
Mm.
Anyway, with that, we'll jump in some theory. So, theory number one, he died.
What?
So, this theory states that he did not survive the jump. That he just, you know, perished within his escape plan and never lived to spend any money or get away with the crime.
Okay, but...
Body? Yep. Never found, and... Yeah, so the FBI... Oh, we'll get into that. FBI concluded that, based on his actions, DB was a non-experienced jumper. They came to this because he jumped in the pitch black night, he jumped when it was raining, it was a 200-mile thing, and also, 200-mile wind, sorry, was blowing. He was wearing loafers and a trench coat, which... Once again, probably that's so awesome, though.
Probably not your fly. Oh, kid.
What a cool guy. Jumped in a... it was also winter, so when he landed, even if he survived the jump from a plane, he'd have to also survive the wilderness. So even if he was an experienced jumper, he was also not equipped to survive the wilderness, had to carry a large sum of money, just jumped from a plane, it was raining, and he was wearing a trench coat and loafers.
Well, that makes me think that he's plotted... roughly where he's going to jump, because if he's not experienced...
That's the thing, though. There was no way to track the flight. The pilot just kind of flew in a direction, and in the middle of that flight, he jumped out.
Do you know how long it took them to notice?
That he was gone? I don't think it would have been that long. Like, they would have been keeping a constant eye on him, but they just noticed he wasn't there between a certain time.
Surely, though, like, from what I know of planes, those doors are heavy.
You can open them by yourself.
It'll make a lot of noise.
It was a back door. You could definitely open it by yourself. Once again, this whole... Some of this case is kind of hearsay. Like, the rumour is that they went off, they came back, and he wasn't there anymore.
I just don't understand if they're just having a quick conversation in the pilot's cabin, for example, and surely they didn't just lock themselves in there and think, I'm not going to watch him.
I'm not quite sure on those.
So I know, I'm just thinking, if he opened the plane door, I feel like that action would have been...
Yeah, when I was researching this, I kind of felt like a bit... wishy-washy, but that is kind of what is the genuine.
I'm starting to think you're about to tell me there's a theory that the captain and the flight attendant knew.
There is no theory. Oh. There's a theory similar, but not something like that.
Well, that's my theory.
Yeah. And his body and the parachute were never found. The money was eventually found, but the body and parachute were never located.
The whole money? The whole 200? Or was it just bills turning up?
There were several bills, and there was also, I think, a briefcase found with a sum of money. Alright. So that's our first theory. What are your thoughts on that one?
I don't think he died. I think that unless he had died, like, jumped into the ocean where his body potentially could have been swept away or hidden that way.
It was forest.
I don't think he's jumping into forest. If he's jumping into forest and I assume... Okay, let's just assume he's not an experienced jumper, so he's probably dying on impact. How a body just hasn't turned up.
Well, those forests are quite a thing. We don't often find things like when we're searching. Like to think that if someone jumped off a plane, we would find them instantly. Also, that theory is true that they didn't quite know like when he jumped, it'd also be harder to locate.
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean, I feel like there would be a radius that they'd be able to work off. But depending, I'm not familiar with American forests, but...
Yeah.
How dense that would have been. But, yeah, all I'm saying is with that one, if he died on impact, I feel like a body would have surfaced at some point, or some type of remains. Like, the briefcase and stuff would have stayed intact.
Yep.
And you did say they found the briefcase. Do you know where?
Yes, we'll get into it in a later theory.
Okay, go on.
All right, so our next suspect is Richard Floyd McCoy, which is a cool-sounding name.
As cool as D.B. Cooper.
Almost. He's a fave kind of suspect of FBI agent Russell Kalame and probation officer Bernie Rhodes. So he was arrested shortly after the D.B. Cooper hijacking in a very, very similar way. So the similarities include hijacking a plane, for instance, the parachuting off the rear of a Boeing 727. So same plane DB Cooper did, the same method of parachuting off the back of it. He also requested 4 parachutes. He was very calm. And he also used notes the same way DB Cooper did. So passing a note to Stewart saying, I have a bomb, please give me this. They both used the phrase, no funny stuff, in their notes. So DB Cooper, upon passing a note to Stewart, said, make sure there's no funny stuff. Richard McCoy also did the same thing. And this is a really interesting one. Both occurred during McCoy's uni breaks. So both hijackings happened whilst he was on a break from university.
You see, when I'm on a break from university, I'm reading my true crime books. I'm not hijacking planes.
Maybe you're just not living life to your fullest.
Maybe not. Maybe that's why we're not rich.
And McCoy's family identified objects left by Cooper, and these were never publicly identified what the objects were. There is a theory that's just kind of wishy-washy out of nowhere, because internet people love making up theories, no shade, that the item found was his university badge with his initials on them. But obviously, that's just people jumping to conclusions. So the FBI ruled him out, as they saw there was no visual match between him and Dan Cooper. And obviously, as stated before, the stewardess got a very, very good look at him. They were quite aware of his, appearance, and they were quite, aware of what he looked like, his physics, his characteristics, his height, his weight, all that.
I'm thinking copycat killer? Copycat.
Maybe. And the other thing that rules him out is he was home in Utah the day after the DB Cooper hijacking.
So is Utah a fair distance from?
I'm fairly sure, but he was also with his family for Thanksgiving the day after. So if he's jumping at 8 p.m. at night, getting home the next day, probably not likely. If you're in a forest, I think. What are your thoughts on Mr. McCoy?
I'm thinking, is there some relation here? Is there a sort of, not a crime ring, but almost like a
copycat?
Not a copycat, because copycats generally don't work with the original, but more, was there some sort of teamwork going on using the same plot?
I doubt it.
And that's why.
I highly doubt it. That just draws suspicion to one of them. So if one gets caught, then you can easily link the crime as these people have done. The only thing that really tears us apart is the no physical characteristic share with DB.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's our second theory. Our third is Dwayne Weber. Weber? I think it's Weber. Could be. So this one's cool. This one's very... Let's just say how you feel about it. So it was claimed that on his deathbed, he said he was D.B. Cooper to his wife. And this was told by his wife.
Right.
Oh,
is that it?
No. There's more that she said. She also said that he had nightmares where he'd wake up saying that he left fingerprints on a plane.
Oh.
He also had knee problems that were apparently from jumping from planes. And he also, there was handwritings found in library books surrounding around D.B. Cooper that had similar handwriting to Dwayne. And apparently he took her to where the money was eventually found on Tina Beach on like a holiday. And this is where the D.B. Cooper money was later found by authorities with the same serial number. And he also had an old Northwest airline ticket that he kept for a reason, his wife.
Was it the exact flight?
I'm not sure. There was no evidence to say whether it's the exact flight. It was just an old Northwest airline ticket. What was the information given? So, what are our thoughts on Dwayne. Mr. Weber.
You know, when you're sleeping at night, I'm mm-hmm. just going to whisper and be like, I left my fingerprints on the fridge. I left my fingerprints on the chocolate cake.
So you don't think there's a lot of weight between this one? Most of this is hearsay from his wife. Yeah,
that's the issue. It's very, like we discussed in the Somerton Man, maybe it's too many things that are of a coincidence that try to make this theory sound legible.
Coinkydink criminals?
If that plane ticket could prove that he'd actually been on the exact flight, then...
Yeah, there's more to it.
Perhaps, and maybe it's just...
Similar to how in the last one, if the objects found were similar or matching to the guy himself and wasn't just like, you know, some random object left.
Hmm. And it's probably just a coincidence that he took his wife to...
Yeah. Like what I said, like, this coincidence happened so many times where things just kind of... I feel like you could link most people by circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence is very good at just making people look like they were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Did the witness or the flight attendant ever look at an image of Joanne?
Not that I found evidence of.
Okay.
It was this is our wife saying that on his deathbed he said, IMDb Cooper. Sure. Alright. What are we up to? Third? Yep.
Third?
Probably.
We're
amateurs at this. Is Kenneth Christensen. So this is a fave suspect of author Jeffrey Gray. So how this one was kind of discovered was Kenneth's brother saw an episode of Unsolved Mysteries surrounding D.B. Cooper and was convinced that D.B. Cooper was his brother.
Oh, right. Yep.
So...
Yep, you've solved it.
Deathbed confession number two.
Ah.
His brother said that on his deathbed, Kenneth said, "There is something you should know, but I cannot tell you."
That's a bit vague.
Maybe
he just, you know, ate the chocolate cake.
There's more evidence here. So, he was the head flight attendant of the same kind of airline that D.B. Cooper hijacked. This would support, like, your kind of theory before of an inside job sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because if it was him and he was a flight attendant, wouldn't he be known?
Head flight attendant.
Yeah, wouldn't he be known within the business?
Do you know everyone who works for your company?
In my store, yes.
But in your company?
No, fair enough.
This is a big airline.
Yeah.
He loved bourbon. So that's another linking thing to DB.
A lot of people love bourbon.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Do you think it's that popular? Maybe in the 70s.
I think that's not a cement.
I don't know, I'm a rum guy, so... he bought a house after the crime, but notably this wasn't a, like, substantially, like, noticeable house. It was just kind of a house in the 1970s, so...
But if you were D.B. Cooper and you wanted to keep it down on the down low...
You probably wouldn't tell your brother, "There is something you should know, but I cannot tell you on your deathbed."
No, you'd probably just buy an average house.
All right. And then they showed a picture of Mr. Kenneth Christensen to the flight attendant, and she agreed they, out of all the suspects the FBI had, he looked the most alike, but she couldn't say for sure whether it was him. That sort of thing. And also the FBI obviously commented on Kenneth as a suspect. They said they didn't agree it was him because Kenneth was a paratrooper, and the FBI had conclusively already come to the conclusion that D.B. Cooper was not skilled at jumping out of airplanes and using parachutes, that sort of thing. So,
what evidence do you know why they thought?
As we stated before, he jumped during the night, he jumped in 200-mile winds, he jumped in the rain, he wore... so he just wasn't doing it properly, you know, as a professional would. Because funnily enough, the more professional you are, the less casually you do things. It's like you don't see professional race car drivers driving around in shorts and, like, thongs. They take it very seriously. They wear the right equipment. So if you're a para jumper or anyone like that, when you're jumping, you're definitely making sure...
You're looking for the right conditions.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a misconception that the better you are at something, the more casually you do it. But typically you find the better you are at something, the more seriously you take it. You know, chefs are very particular about how they use their knives and safety, and they're just willy-nilly chopping up stuff. So that's why the FBI ruled out. Anyway, that's all my suspects I have, and that's my whole case. A little bit shorter one this time. This case is mostly focused around the suspects and not the actual situation itself. So overall,
and if we did make it clear this one is unsolved.
Yeah. Like, there's a couple theories, and I think that's what's better about this one. Unlike the Somerton Man, where it's like, oh, it could have been this, or this. This is a concrete kind of choose your suspects. So at the moment, what theory do you reckon?
I don't think your suspects, some of them have aspects that aren't concrete for me.
But they are concrete, like there is a set list of people it could have been. So anyway, what are your thoughts on all our suspects here? Which one do you reckon is the most compelling?
Well, so Richard Floyd McCoy, I would say he's fairly strong. But the fact that he did a similar heist may again just be one of those things that are purely coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how common...
But the fact that he requested four parachutes and used notes and similar phrases is quite interesting.
But his case did happen after DB Cooper, though.
But this, I'm assuming from this one, his second one wasn't successful. No, maybe he got great. Maybe if
45 years.
Maybe DB 45 years after.
No, 45 years he got.
Oh right.
No.
I was like, geez, he's.
Wait a little bit.
Maybe DB Cooper.
It's about 6 months after.
Which is why I think maybe DB Cooper got greedy. If it was Richard Floyd.
If you robbed a plane for $3.6 million, would you do it again?
I wouldn't, but criminals are greedy.
You think he's just doing it for
they
the thrill?
They think that they can they get it away once, they can do it again.
So you reckon he's a thrill seeker?
I think so.
There's easier ways to get thrills though than trying to rob an airline again.
I guess the other advantage is the difference between, like, robbing, for example, a bank and robbing a plane. I'd argue there's more that can go wrong in a bank in terms of surveillance, in terms of...
I'd argue the getting away part's harder on a plane as you are trapped in air and you're at the mercy of the pilot to land and dictate where you end up.
That is, yeah.
Whereas a bank, you can kind of, like, jump in a car. You can't just, unless you're a skilled pilot, take control of a plane. Even if you're a skilled pilot, I don't believe one pilot can navigate a Boeing 737. Whilst also trying to keep people in order.
But there is the issue of the fact that there was no visual match.
Yeah.
By the air...
hostess?
Air hostess.
Like I said,
but like I said at the beginning, sorry, before, that doesn't mean that this wasn't some sort of team kind of scheme kind of...
I think you're doing that thing again, though, where you're putting all the killers and criminals in a like connected universe and then trying to make the pieces fit. This could have been like a coin... Like, you can't just say that, oh, two people got shot in their living room and they're both female, so these two cases are probably connected. The same with hijackings. Maybe it's just like... Like how you take a gun to rob a bank, it's just procedure to get four parachutes when you rob a plane. It might just be like an unwritten law.
All I'm saying is that McCoy, there's a couple of possibilities. Either he was DB Cooper and he thought he'd give it a go again,
or he was emulating,
or it was a copycat, yeah. Or it was some sort of, you know, group
syndicate
type thing.
I think
or,
the thing that, oh, sorry,
or he just wasn't anything, he just was doing his own thing,
yep.
Or
that's the thing, there's so much.
Alright, we've got Dwayne. Okay, Dwayne. He claimed on his deathbed, and this
no,
is...
No. His wife claimed that he said
he
on his deathbed.
Yeah, sorry. She claimed on his deathbed, which is not strong.
And then she also said that he was murmuring in his sleep about fingerprints on a plane. The strongest evidence for him is just the money place and also the air ticket and the bad knee.
But again, like we talked about before, they're just... coincidence.
And we also don't know whether his bad knee was from the plane or whether she's added that as well.
Then we've got Kenneth Christensen.
Yep.
I mean, again, another deathbed confession. There is something you should know, but I cannot tell you. That could be a lot of things. Not necessarily I'm DB Cooper.
Could be adoption, could be an affair, could be a crime that's not related to this.
But as I said originally that... I have a feeling that this might be an inside job, and that's why, if he got away with it, that's why he got away with it. So
yeah.
The head flight attendant...
Yeah, inside knowledge.
Inside knowledge of it.
He'd noticed general flight plans of how pilots are kind of instructed to fly for jumping out.
There might have seemed to anyone else on the outside that the pilot was flying randomly across Seattle and... Not Seattle, sorry. What did we say?
It was Seattle.
Oh, it was Seattle. Randomly, but maybe it wasn't so random.
Yeah.
Maybe he looked at the time and knew where the pilot was.
But why drop him? Why jump him in a forest?
More places to hide.
Why not just let him go in a closer place and lie to the authorities and say that you dropped him in this coordinates instead?
Were the authorities not keeping an eye on that flight after it was
dropped? How would they know when he jumped? If it's an inside job, the pilot could just wait 10 minutes, fly a bit
longer.
Wouldn't
they be watching the flight?
Watching what?
The flight.
In 1971, you're watching the flight, and you could notice people jumping off it?
Probably not.
So maybe if you were inside job, you'd... Or maybe he did do that. Maybe DB Cooper got off earlier, and he said, oh, no, he's in the forest, but that wouldn't explain how money ended up... Well, maybe it could. Maybe that's a good theory. Inside job, and they just lied about the position.
I just think if he survived...
You can do a lot of bribing with $3.5 million as well.
Exactly. Maybe offer the share of the share of the money. Maybe that's why it was in the suitcase in the bay for a pilot or someone to pick up.
Yeah, they're all really good theories. Like, and then the other one of him just dying, I think, is also quite solid. That, you know, unskilled pilot, spur of the moment crime, planned it all out in the plane, and then got to the jumping part, and then just kind of panicked.
What's your thoughts? What do you think is most solid?
I'm a big believer of the died, that he just didn't survive the fall.
So where's the rest of the money?
Well, they found some of it in circulation, but it was rain that night. It could have got destroyed then. Could have been teared by animals, lost in the forest.
Do animals eat money?
Sorry?
Do animals eat money?
No, but they could tear it up. They could use it for shelter. They could use it for building nests, anything like that. I know, I feel like there's a lot of good compelling theories and that you could come to any conclusion based on viewing the case in a different way. But anyway, that concludes our podcast on D.B. Cooper, the Norjack hijacking. Please let us know what your kind of theories are and what you feel happened in the case. We've really been enjoying doing these. We've got a lot of good feedback. Our Facebook page is slowly growing. We're getting lots of views on and on the podcast. Seeing the analytics is always fun. We have a little giggle when the numbers go up. And some of our more loyal listeners have sent in some questions and a couple of requests, so we'll read those out now. So do you want to take the first one, Rob?
So we've had requests regarding the Stephen Avery case. If you're familiar with Making a Murder on Netflix, you would know a fair bit about this case. This case starts some arguments in this household.
We're both on opposite sides. Let's not reveal what sides we're on.
I'm quite passionate about this case and the different aspects that go along with it.
I think the thing with this case is, as it's quite, you know, broad and has a Netflix documentary made about it, it would probably have to be a several-parter just to cover all the information.
There's a lot of different things.
Theories, information, stories. We'd have to do a lot of research. So maybe if we, you know, do this a bit more long-term and have more investment to kind of look into it and research, we could cover that one, but that would be a multiple part for sure.
The next one that we had sent in was the Unabomber. Now, I know the title, Unabomber, but I actually don't know a lot about that one, so that'll be fun for me to do a bit of...
Yeah, once again, I don't know much about it, but I've heard the name before, if that makes sense. I've heard the Unabomber case, just not many details.
And then, as a bit of a side thing, both Brody and I really enjoy wrestling and WWE in particular. We've also had a request to look at the Chris Benoit case, which happened in 2007, I think.
Yeah, both the Unabomber suggestion and the Chris Benoit one were sent in by host of the PG Wrestling Retrospective podcast, Lewis. So our friend Ewan also sent it about Benoit, so obviously that one's quite popular with a certain subcategory. I loved looking into it. It looks into things such as, you know, CTE, the damage of industries on, you know, people, especially like with NFL and contact sports in general, and just kind of looking into how these things are kind of developed. We could do like even a little part series on murders that are probably or believed to have sprung from CTE, such as OJ Simpson, the Hernandez one.
Aaron Hernandez.
Yeah, so those ones are all interesting. If we did that, I'd probably want to look more into CT and kind of delve into it as an issue. So if you guys are keen for those, please let us know. Other than that, we have a Facebook page now.
Got a Twitter.
Yeah. Do you want to say the name of the page, Rob? What's our Facebook called?
Right, let's not screw up this tongue twister.
Go for it.
Prime Time True Crime Podcast.
Got it. So join that one. Give us a like. Send us some suggestions. It's been really good. We're really enjoying this. Second episode, we're pumping this one quite early so you guys have something to listen to and we can kind of start pumping out content so people can enjoy it. But other than that, I've been Brody.
I'm Robin.
And thank you for joining us.